Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk.
And we are back. Joe, if you'd evaluate the show, how has the show gone so far?
I think the show has gone excellent, Kevin.
Really?
Yeah.
Joe's doing a great job.
You know, yeah, maybe I was just telling the guys off air that I'm all hyped up on Excedrin and I'm trying to get over a migraine, but somehow I'm like zoned in because of the caffeine in the
zoned in or tuned in?
Well, a little bit of both. I'm right on mark tonight on my questions.
We had a doctor that kind of specialized in psychology. Maybe they could tell us.
Did you see what Kevin was drinking? That Monster. Oh,
I'm doing the Monster Ultra Red.
Usually you do the blue.
Yeah, I found this one in the store, and it just kind of, it was 2 for $4.
There you go. You're gonna say you found it.
How do you go wrong? They rope you in. I normally will buy 2 of them, so I'll have one for the next day.
Do you drink one every day?
I think I do.
See, now, you shouldn't be saying anything about me taking a few Excedrin before I came in.
How can you afford that? I thought you only get 20 bucks a week for your allowance.
I'm very, very frugal with
20 bucks a week will get you one of those a day.
Probably.
No, it was 2 for $4.
He wouldn't make it through the drive-thru, though.
There you go.
You weren't good at math, were you? I thought you went to Wentworth or something.
No, but I never mind. I wanted to go there.
What would you like to introduce our next guest?
Yeah, let me find the sheet. Okay.
All right, why don't I just do it? We are privileged to have someone who you can... she's done hundreds of interviews, whether it's in magazines like Time Magazine, Parenting Magazine. Also, she's also been a frequent guest. I've seen her a couple times on the Fox Morning Show on Fox 25.
We've had her in studio.
She's also done WJAR and WPRO. Those are Rhode Island stations. We have Dr. Kate Roberts joining us. Dr. Kate, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Kevin and Joe?
I'm doing good. And we also have one of our sponsors who sits in every couple of weeks. We have Peter Brown from Tiny and Sons.
Hi, Dr. Kate.
Hi, how are you,
good.
Peter?
How are you?
Great.
Peter is a very well-rounded, we're getting him to one of these days when if Joe and I have to take a day off, Peter will step behind the microphone and take over for a night.
Yep.
Something to look forward to.
You'll be my first guest. We can talk about things.
We'll look more forward to Kevin taking a night off.
Exactly.
Yeah. we actually kind of got a couple of things to talk about tonight, Dr. Kate. I guess first and foremost, we as a region celebrating, we're not celebrating, but commemorating the one-year anniversary of a horrific event that took place, the Boston Marathon bombings. I think today was kind of a celebration.
I was just going to say, today it's kind of different because today we were able to celebrate, whereas last week we were able to kind of mourn. And I think that that's
would you
a
say
little
mourn. Mourn's kind of a weird.
Well, mourn
or just remember.
Remember. I think for some people mourning, for some people remembering. I think it's weird. It's a different kind of anniversary because, like September 11th, there was no day of, at least at the time, of celebration that followed.
No repeat of it.
Yeah, and here we were able to have those commemorations, but then also celebrate on the anniversary.
Well, I found that a lot of people were tense up till today because they didn't know what was going to happen.
Sure, yeah. We were worried about
the uncertainty around it. I mean, from what I've seen, it's been a real victory.
Yeah.
You know, for everybody, people who ran and people who didn't run. So I think it really puts some closure on the events of the last year, and it's a milestone. You know, there's no turning back. The 1 year has come and gone, and it's really a passing that helps when people are grieving. And in a stage of loss, and it was just so uplifting.
Do you look back at last week? We saw last Tuesday where there were a lot of ceremonies and folks trying to at least remember what took place, and then having an incident take place later that evening. Do you think that was in the back of people's minds at all when we came to today's race? Or do you think it was something where we knew that the person who got arrested was kind of a stooge and it was kind of a, you know, that the police were on it?
Look, I mean, I think this is always in the back of people's minds since 9/11.
Right.
Anytime people get together in this kind of a forum, I really do. And I think other countries have been living with it for a long time. Mm-hmm. you know, God bless them. And you know, you kind of learn to live with it. There's a vulnerability here that we have learned to live with. And people are brave and they're strong and they go out and they experience life despite that. But I think that we'd be fooling ourselves. Our brain works on many different levels, and we can't ignore the possibility that this kind of thing has happened in the past, and therefore we're more vulnerable.
It's interesting because I talked to a bunch of different people about, you know, leading up to this, and they said to me, oh, because, and I think we all, I don't know if anyone, everyone has had the same thought, but for a, since 9/11, you know, I, because of some of the work I've done with 9/11 in the past after
you've
that
done
day,
a lot.
and I've done some work, and it kind of always was in the back of my mind that something like this was very, very possible. And like you said, Dr. Kate, because we've seen it happen for much longer than just before 9/11 in cities in countries like Israel and countries like Pakistan, and where suicide bombers would blow buses up and blow, you know, all that would happen. So, you know, I think I talked to a lot of people beforehand. They said, oh, do you think it can happen again? Do you think it can happen again? And unfortunately, I think it will happen again at some point, much like, you know, I think everyone said after 9/11, we will be attacked again at some point just because we are such a free society. And, you know, it's actually amazing to me, and this may sound harsh, that this doesn't happen more often in our country. And I say that only because, and I say that out of the biggest respect for our law enforcement, which I believe has a big part in preventing these types of things. But think about all the events that could have happened that have actually been prevented that we know about in the last 10, 12 years because of the work that law enforcement has done. And so, yes, I do. I think it is in the back of a lot of people's minds that, you know, could this happen in a large crowd? Sure. And could it happen again? It probably will. And well, it's unfortunate.
And it's not even that. I mean, look at Israel. It's practically a military state.
True.
They have it happen there all the time.
Yep.
I mean, these things can't be prevented on some level. You know, if somebody is absolutely determined, they're going to be able to find a way. But I think what we have shown today and we've shown in the past is that there's resiliency here, there's spirit and coming together.
Mm.
We're a very strong community, and we're not invincible, you know, to those kinds of insults. But we are really tightly woven and able to support each other to come through them.
We're humans.
We're vulnerable to this in the modern society that we live in.
I think we can deal with this when we're adults. But how about as far as children? Let's not forget the tragedy that took place a year ago. An 8-year-old child died during this incident.
Right. Well, I think that children, you know, are the most vulnerable because they don't have the reasoning skills to know how to put this in the context of their entire life. You know, for us as adults, we can say, well, we've lived so many years and, you know, we haven't been directly affected, or if we have, it's been during this one incident and we've come through it, et cetera. So I think that children, you know, if they're only living 8 years, you know, and it's already happened in their family or to somebody that they know, then it's something that could become more regular in their mind. So I think that it really depends on how the parents interpret these events and respond to them. And it's really, you know, for the parents to work through their reactions and keep them separate from parenting so that they're really able to reassure their child and give them perspective. This is not an everyday occurrence here. It's very rare, and it's going to continue to be very rare. Does that mean it's impossible? No.
But it's you have to think is we are, you know, before 9/11 we were such a more freer society. Now it's a matter of more and more we become, when it comes to a big event, we have to worry about becoming a police state for that day during an event. I mean, you know, I saw on Facebook and social media people tweeting out the enormous police presence that they saw in an event like today, just to make sure people were safe. And that, you know, this is, you know, you can't bring backpacks, and there's so many precautions. I mean, we can't get on a plane. You can't get on a plane in under 2 hours because They got to check everything. You check your shoes. It's, you know, you got to do a body scan. It's more and more since 9/11, we have become more of a police state. Joe?
But, well, I was just going to say, I personally am okay with that. I mean, I'm under the pretense that some people, and we go back to like what right after the anniversary, right after the attacks, I know people that wouldn't go out in large crowds like that afterwards. And I'm under the theory personally that if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. I'm not going to change the way I live because of something like that. As you said, Dr. Kate, because they are very rare. They happen. Things like this happen.
Well, the other
they're extremely rare. Exactly. But I'm okay with having not necessarily the freedoms taken away, but the security stepped up so that the rest of us can enjoy those freedoms to continue.
And that's what happens when we had that bombing last year, and the Bostonians and the whole United States showed the resiliency of us and going towards that and educating ourselves and stuff, where it takes the meaning of that bombing away from the terrorists.
Yes.
Because they didn't cripple us from
that. Right. That's right. And I think, and that's their whole stick, is to bomb, create events like the Boston Marathon to create fear and try to prevent people from doing the freedoms that we enjoy. And I think we've taken away that ability, not the ability for them to do that, certainly, but their ability to feel like they're striking the fear in the people. And again, I go back to right after 9/11, a lot of people said, well, is the skyscraper industry over? Are people going to go back into tall buildings? Yeah, just because of that was kind of the mindset. And of course, now we've got Freedom Tower, I think, fittingly going back up onto Ground Zero, where no, we're not. And we will not let that stop us.
You know, I feel very proud. I feel very connected to our roots here. I feel that, you know, we're perceived as the rest of the world, as, you know, not having the struggles and not being as strong and having sort of this resiliency. And I feel like we are able to address and combat and, you know, confront these things. And if these things continue to happen, you know, rarely, it's not going to break our spirit. And I think that if there's any silver lining here, I'm really happy to show the rest of the world that. I really want them to see us for who we are, because I think we're misrepresented way too often. Mm. Mm.
Is it fitting that an American male, the first time since 83. Thank you. Sorry. I was off by 10 years. I apologize. Easy now. won this, at least on the men's side? Is that fitting?
Yes, I mean, I think it's a symbol of what we represent. I feel very confident in the American people's ability to come together and defend off and represent ourselves in whatever way we need to at any point in time.
Dr. K, what do you think, and this goes back again to other, you know, kind of anniversaries that like this and 9/11, September 11th, and other events that will eventually happen that we have to kind of remember. What do you say to people as we, you know, move away from the day of the event, going into the future, and inevitably, you know, the common folk that were not involved, especially not well outside of Boston, we'll forget. And I mean, that obviously happens, and we try to make sure that people remember. You know, what do you say to people on all levels about anniversaries in general and how we should handle them as time goes on?
I think it's a very personal thing. I think that there's probably going to be some public recognition, as there is for 9/11, you know, and there will be for this on the anniversary of April 15th. But I think that it's a very personal thing, and that people need to decide as individuals and as families and within their community how they want to commemorate and mark that point in their lives. You know, with Sandy Hook, you know, they did something special this year, and I'm sure every year going forward they will. So it really is, it's good, though, it's important and healing to have somewhat of a coming together around that moment of tragedy.
Again, we're speaking with the Dr. Kate Roberts, and we're talking with her about, well, first off, we're kind of talking about the anniversary that just has kind of come and gone, the one-year anniversary of the Boston Marathon bombings. And, you know, I mean, there's still more that's to this. Let's not forget the what happened the days afterwards leading up to finally tracking down the Zanayev brothers. And we still have the trial that's coming up. And,
there's a lot of unhealed wounds. That's an excellent point. I mean, that really prolonged the trauma.
Mm.
You know, having children that are young, even though I wasn't close to the location at the time, just feeling unsafe within my own house. And so that really put a lot additional stress on the community. And again, you know, there's been so much resilience around it, but I think the trial is going to have people re-experiencing that. There's going to be so much portrayal, you know, of the person accused, and it's really going to trigger those memories, I think.
Mm. What's the best things to kind of, if someone is dealing with that, I mean, what's some of the things that you would say to an individual who was, you know, feeling a lot of emotions about, you know, dealing with this 1 year anniversary?
Well, you know, I would say that in terms of for parents, I would say, you know, try not to expose a lot of that to children. They don't need to know. If, you know, when the trial starts, they don't need to be exposed like the rest of us do to be informed through the media. So to really limit that, because that's going to trigger their memories from last year. And I think that in terms of, you know, everybody else, that this is a milestone, but that grief comes and goes. And there will be times when it's triggered. And at that point, they need to figure out what's going to get them through it until the next point. I mean, we've all had loss in our lives at this point. And so we know what it's like to initially grieve and then go through the stages. And at birthdays or anniversaries of loved ones' death, you know, we get triggered again. And we have to take care of ourselves and our family in the presence of that.
Well, I know we probably could continue talking about this for the remainder of the segment. Anything we want to say in closing in regards to commemorating this date and this time in history in regards to the Boston Marathon bombing?
I just think that, you know, this is a great first step in the healing process, and there's going to be many more.
Excellent point. I also wanted to have you for a few moments kind of talk about April being Autism Awareness Month. We wanted to get you on sooner in the month, but no time like the present to kind of talk about it. Give me your thoughts on commemorating this month, something that I think a lot of folks, you know, we're coming to a realization that autism is something that is part of our society, and that you know, that our children, you know, that it's something we deal with.
It is. And, you know, it's really, for whatever reason, it's really growing in numbers.
Mm.
So in the last decade, it's increased to 1 out of 88 children are being labeled with autism spectrum disorder. And so that's any range of different behaviors that can make up, you know, the autism spectrum disorder. But I think what I really want to impart to the community and parents is that earlier is better, so that there's so much research and more being done every day, that if children are exhibiting the signs of autism, that it is not a time to wait, that parents need to act soon. And there might be practitioners that are in their lives that don't emphasize that enough. So, you know, historically, I've heard from parents, and I'm not knocking the medical profession at all, but there are some very conservative physicians, pediatricians, who, you know, don't necessarily see some of the initial signs as indicators to get help. And I think that parents need to trust their gut, and they live with their child, and if they think that some of the initial indicators are there, things like not making eye contact, not interacting enough, you know, in terms of socially responsiveness,
right,
turning your head, early smiling, things like that. Of course, you know, autism is also manifested in not a lot of verbalizations early on. Those kinds of things, if they feel at all concerned, then there's resources available, and parents need to seek them out. And, you know, it's tough because you might see it in someone else's child. You might be aware and start to see some of these signs in someone else's child. And so, you know, just being familiar and aware enough and socially skilled enough to, you know, maybe introduce the topic or talk about how things are going, because it's so important if in the first, you know, 3-4 years of a child's life to get some of this early help really can decrease the impact on their lives, And parents don't want to see it, you know, a lot of times. They want to think that it's developmental and things like that. But there are early indicators that can't be ignored.
Sure, and you know, it's interesting you say that, because I actually know somebody that the parents were in complete denial, the child had autism, and they still have not gotten the help, even though the child clearly has autism, and the parents are just in complete denial. So one of the things I was going to ask is when you first noticed a child, you know, may have those signs, I mean, at
symptoms,
any
symptoms, yeah.
signs, you know, at any age, I mean, it's just simple therapy, the type of thing that can help kind of guide a child, like, you know, what are some of the immediate things that can be done? You know, you mentioned go see a physician, but, you know, autism obviously can't really be cured by any drugs we know of. So what are some of the earlier things that can be done?
You know, it's early parent-child training. It's really parent-child training, because we're talking about very young children, children that, again, are under the age of 4, who, you know, once they're at 4 and 5, they're going to be picked up in the school and quickly. I think our schools in Massachusetts, anyway, do a phenomenal job with recognizing the early signs, getting these kids tested, and getting them help. But it's you know, but even at that age, they've already had it now for that long. So it's getting into the home and getting in front of these parents with their child and really helping develop the social interaction so it becomes more reciprocal and the child becomes more engaged and learning to decrease negative behaviors and increase positive behaviors. And children can be trained, as we know, from very young.
What are some of what are some of the things that a parent can do? I mean, how early should a child be tested in regards to autism? I mean, do you wait until a child is 6 months, a year?
It really depends on the child, but I would say that if a child is not responsive, you know, to social interaction at 6 months or earlier, then that's a sign there's a problem. So, you know, you can't overemphasize the importance of trying to get help early. And I think that, you know, my comment about the pediatricians is that I think historically the medical profession has been very conservative, you know, with this label. And I'm certainly not trying to, you know, overemphasize it. But what I'm saying is I'd rather have some false, you know, positive testing. I'd rather refer a child to be assessed earlier on than miss a child and have them not get the services that they, you know, should have.
Should the assessment be done when they do the 6 month and year physicals instead of waiting for it?
Well, I think that a pediatrician should always be doing assessments around reciprocal interaction. I mean, children as young as 1 and 2 months can have reciprocal interaction. And then there are those that just don't. And if it's not developing, then that's an indication that there's something wrong for that child.
Right.
You know, I mean, we talk about this like, you know, every child is going to get autism. But really, I mean, the statistics are one in 61 children are born with some form of autism. And it doesn't have to be the autism. I think I don't know as well as you do, obviously, Dr. Kate. But I mean, it doesn't have to be the autism that we see stereotypically, which is the non-interactions kind of sitting there staring off in the distance. It could even be simple, you know, autism that comes down to like Asperger's, or there's some other forms that are functional autism, I guess you would
say. Well said, Joe. Yep.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a whole range. That's why they call it a spectrum. And there are a lot of high functioning. people, but actually those are the people that could even benefit, you know, even more earlier on. So really trying to early intervention is really, and, you know, they'll come to people's houses and really try and work with them around building these skills for children and helping the parents because they're frustrated. Obviously, we all want our children to be quote-unquote typical, and when children aren't developing in that manner, you know, how parents cope with it affects their child.
Unfortunately, Dr. Kate, that's all the time that we have this evening. Anything you want to say in closing in regards to recognizing this month as far as for autism awareness?
I think it's a very important topic. I really appreciate you having me on to discuss it.
Yep.
I think that, you know, the more we can raise awareness as individuals and as a community, the more we can help the children and adults that have this and have them be more successful and have better lives.
If folks, you know, want to follow you, any blogs that you're doing, I know you're somebody who's up to date when it comes to social media. How can they find out more about you?
It's Dr. Kate Parenting on Facebook. That's a great way to see. And I blog on HuffPost and Psychology Today. So any of those forums.
Well, I'm
always looking for feedback.
And we're always looking forward to having you back. I'm sure we're going to have you scheduled in the next 4 to 5 weeks to come back and talk some more.
Fabulous. It was great talking to you all. Have a wonderful evening.
You as well.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Peter, anything you want to say in closing before we wrap up the show, my friend?
Great job. This was very entertaining.
Thank you.
I learned a lot. You guys are awesome.
We thank you for sitting in, and we want to thank Tiny and Sons for being a fantastic sponsor to our show.
I want to thank Kevin for coming tonight. Kevin, you did a great job.
Thanks, Kevin.
We're like doing the glad handing thing here. just real quick, we want to kind of throw it out there. There's a new show called Veterans Voice that's starting April 23rd, and it'll be broadcasting every week from 7:30 to 8:30. It's a Wednesday night. Show will include discussions and topics such as careers, housing, family services, education, the GI Bill, women's veterans issues, stories from veterans. And they're actually looking for veterans to appear on the show, whether it's via call-in or in studio discussion. And if you're interested in being a part of this or you want to share your story, contact Greg Brasso, 781-985-1551. That's all the program that I got. Joe, this is going to be our last show together until either the 12th or the 19th.
Oh, man, I'm going to miss my Monday nights getting taken up by this show.
Hey, I'm kidding.
I'm having a blast.
You know, you had an opportunity when you had the mayor here, because the mayor is, Mayor Carpenter is a Marshfield guy. You could have kind of thrown that, who here isn't from Marshfield thing. You missed your opportunity.
Well, I was going to start discussing flood insurance, but I think Brockton's a little landlocked, so that wasn't necessarily a topic that had to be discussed.
Something to keep in mind. But
I don't know. I think the water comes from Pembroke, so they don't flood too much over there.
We want to thank our guests this evening. And you got some great shows coming up after ours at the 8 o'clock. What's your problem? As well as
I ask you that all the time.
Yeah, I know. And also South Shore Live with Stan and the Gang at 8:30. So
awesome.
Be sure to tune into those fantastic programs and keep your dial set right here at the 95.9 WA.
We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Thank you, Kevin.